fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak. There's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I tell you what, we'll employ the same rules Bruce Arians uses during the OTAs, gentlemen. If it's efficient, quality work, then we'll cut you free a good 25 minutes early, like day one of OTAs. Kyle's on board with that. Darren?
So we're done? Is this over?
Whoa, now Darren.
Normally, it's 25 minutes, so we're done.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thanks. Goodbye.
I know it was a solid intro, but it wasn't that good. You guys need to stay tuned right there. Cardinals Underground, Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard. And are you guys more of a good news first or bad news first sort of guy? Kyle, what would be your preference?
I prefer the newsiest news first.
Like a true newspaper man.
That's right.
What about you, Darren?
I would tend to agree with that. Smacks you in the face?
No.
What is smacking you in the face,
That's
Paul?
That's not good podcasting. You'd never agree with Kyle. Don't ever agree with Kyle. Okay,
I'm more of a. Plenty of times I don't agree with Kyle.
I'm more of a bad news first kind of guy. So with that in mind, well, Bruce Arians had something to say after day one of OTAs, and this is about 7 minutes into his press conference, and then we got this headline.
Deion just had surgery, and on his ankle, it was lingering, so we went ahead and had it operated on.
All right, so Deion Buchanan on day one of OTAs had surgery. The team takes the field. He went into the operating room, and according to the timetable, I think it was you, Kyle, who asked him. BA said, quote, hopefully September.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a clarification, hopefully early September, meaning the season opener. Hopefully, though, is the operative word there.
Yeah, it's not like it doesn't seem like it's a sure thing that he will be ready for the regular season opener at this point. Bruce said if the rehabilitation goes well, it goes perfectly, then he should be ready. But we all know there's hurdles. We've seen guys who have had their injuries linger for a long time. And hopefully, because it's surgery, he can just get it done and get back and be ready. But it's certainly a big question mark to me at this point.
I mean, was he injured at the end of last year and he missed a couple of games? Yeah, but he was out there during phase two workouts. So to me, that really raised an eyebrow.
Well, I mean, I guess I look at it like, first of all, when the season was over, Dalen told those of us who were talking to him in the locker room that the day after that, you know, he wasn't going to need surgery. I think the hope was that the rest was going to do enough to make it better. And I guess it wasn't healing. And you know, I know once this all the news came out, there were plenty of fans that were wondering, okay, why wait until May to get this done? But I don't think it's so much a question of waiting until May to get this done. Look, if a guy can avoid surgery, he wants to avoid surgery. It's easy for the fans to say, well, why wouldn't you just go under the knife and take care of it? You're trying to avoid going under the knife if you can. You know, unfortunately, it didn't work out the way clearly Deion wanted it to. But, you know, to me, that's one of the reasons he was out there in phase two. I think the thought process was obviously until recently, and I haven't talked to him, but just by watching how everything went, if he's out there in phase two, he's thinking, okay, I'm going to be able to weather this storm. And apparently at some point, either he or doctors or a combination thereof decided that the storm wasn't going to be able to be weathered. They probably should just take care of it so it wouldn't linger.
And I guess that's my point is in phase two, at least to my eye, you couldn't tell he was injured. I mean, he was going through the linebacker drills and he was cutting and weaving and, you know, making plays out there against air. But I mean, he was moving pretty well, so I guess that was part of my shock.
Yeah, and I get that. And again, I think Deion's the kind of guy who, one, probably wouldn't want to have surgery, and two, felt like he could make it through. I mean, he's been out there. We saw the great groundwork video that the broadcast team put together where, you know, about him lifting and stuff like that. He's been doing everything normally, quite frankly. So I know I was taken aback a little bit by it, but you know, again, if the determination was that if you take care of this with surgery now, then maybe you're that much healthier going into the season. I don't blame him for wanting to do that.
And this was something, I think it happened in September or so, that I don't know if there was a longer history there, but Bruce Arians did mention something right after the season. He said, we were worried that it might be chronic and that he'd need surgery, but it looks like it's healing. So they definitely looked at it. I think they considered surgery right after the season and felt like it was just going to heal on its own. And hindsight being 2020, yeah, of course you would have done it at that point if you knew what you know now. I mean, you don't want him to miss any part of the regular season. So if you did it in January, he probably could have been back by either, you know, mini camp or training camp. But the fact that they didn't, I mean, this is where they're at. And I think the hope is if we can fix it now, it won't be a chronic thing that lingers every single season. If it gets caught up a little bit, then he's out a few weeks. So I think they just want to try to get it fixed and get a clean slate for Dayon.
And I do want to say that as we sit here and, you know, we talk, I'm hesitant to speculate, even though that's what we're doing is kind of speculating. But, you know, we go back to last year. Justin Bethel has a surgery in April. Everybody's like, wait a minute, he was hurt all last year and now he's having surgery. Why are we waiting till April? Again, we find out later that, well, it wasn't the same injury. He actually re-injured himself at some point. So we don't know all the things. And again, I'm hesitant to blame a guy for getting surgery when he does or when he doesn't. I mean, that's a very personal choice, and it's easy for fans to sit out there or anybody else to sit out there and say, well, why wouldn't you have done this sooner? It's not always a simple decision.
What we do know is that running first team is your first-round rookie, Hassan Reddick. And then after that, it gets pretty thin pretty quick. I mean, you got Carlos Dansby at 35 years of age, soon to be 36, and then you have a rookie who's never played the inside linebacker spot. I guess I'm wondering, just thinking out loud, is Steve Keim in the market for a veteran inside linebacker?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly a possibility. Like you said, Hassan Reddick, as talented as he is, he was a defensive end at Temple, and now he's trying to move inside. And he did it at the Senior Bowl where he showed the movement skills and his talent, but you still have to diagnose offensive plays and figure out if it's a play action or if it's actually a run and a lot of different things that you don't really have to do at outside linebacker or a pass rusher. So I think it's going to be a steep learning curve for him. I think they're going to give him every opportunity in the world to start and to play well, but I agree with you. If there's a guy out there that they like and they think can be a nice form of insurance, it makes a lot of sense to me to bring someone in.
It'll be interesting to see some of the guys that are on the roster. You know, does Scooby Wright get more of a look? Does Gabe Martin get more of a look? Maybe Xavier Gooden, who not a lot of people know about because he was kind of he was on the practice squad and kind of here and there, but he's another guy that's at least been around this defense. So it'll be interesting to see if they give these other guys more of a glance. But I would agree with Kyle. I mean, I could see them looking at this depending on how Dayon's recovery goes.
The good news is a guy we know real well has a different look about him. Here's Bruce Arians.
Smoke looks like John Brown. A couple of those routes he ran, he did not run one route like that last year. He couldn't. And the smile on his face and him laughing and just knock on wood, it stays that way.
All right, so the medical issues seem to be behind John Brown, and you know that because all of a sudden the DBs are behind John Brown. The speed is back, and something else is back, right? You were talking to him at his locker?
Yeah, his confidence is definitely back, where he definitely had some issues mentally at the end of last season where it just didn't go his way. He was having the physical issues, and he was down about it. He was struggling with the fact that finally in his third year, he wasn't just having a really successful season. So now he feels like, I'm back physically. I know what I've done my first 2 years in the NFL. He knows he can compete at a really high level and be a 1,000-yard receiver because he's already done it. So I think he's excited. You know, we're still a few months away from the season, but he definitely feels like he's healthy now and he can get right back into that lane.
You when you talk to John Brown, it reminds me a little bit of Tyrann Mathieu in the fact that when these guys are playing well, their moods are different than when they're not playing well. And when I say they're not playing well, it's injury related with those guys. You know, Tyrann, to me, when you interact with Tyrann Mathieu, it's different. When, you know, in 2015 when things were going really well, to let's say last year when he clearly wasn't himself and he knew he wasn't himself. And I feel like the same thing was with Smoke. I mean, when you interacted with Smoke last year, you could tell something was wrong and it was impacting him emotionally as well as physically. And, you know, again, when I got a chance to talk to him a couple, 3 weeks ago, you know, he was talking about how he was always kind of the life of not necessarily the life of the party, but at home, the family always expected him to like get everybody smiling and joking around and everything. And he wasn't that guy. And I think as the media saw more recently here, as he finally talked to everybody, that you know, he's a different person when things are going well, which you can't blame him for. I guess we're probably all like that,
Absolutely.
But I think it makes a big difference.
But you know what? I think that's an apt comparison, because if you listen to his teammates, each guy on each side of the ball, there's a lot of similarities. I mean, you can make an argument that obviously Carson Palmer, your quarterback, is the MVP of the offense. Maybe your left tackle, Larry Fitzgerald. You could argue on defense it's Patrick Peterson is the MVP, et cetera. But when you listen to the teammates and who the inspiration is and the one guy that trickles down through the rest of the unit, you know, John Brown was that guy in offense and Tyrann Mathieu has been that guy in defense ever since day one.
Yeah, I think especially a guy like Tyrann, who he's such a good player when he's healthy and he's such a vocal leader, passionate guy. And I think people like feeding off of him. And he doesn't feel like he can be that guy when he's not playing well. He's so used to being a star that when he's hurt or when he's playing just like a regular guy, he doesn't feel comfortable in that type of skin. So him, John Brown is a more quiet guy, and I think he's never going to be the same leader as a guy like Tyrann. But I think on the field, John Brown is super important, what he does. But a guy like Tyrann, we can already see a little bit of it this offseason. He doesn't want to make any bold proclamations, but you can tell he's definitely motivated. His brace is off now. He's feeling healthier, and I don't think he wants to talk too much this offseason. He just wants to put it together and have another big year.
I love Tyrann's comment to you guys where he said, you know, ever since I've been a kid, my game has been built on confidence, quote unquote. You know, a lot of that confidence wasn't there a year ago. When you don't have confidence in your own condition, then how can you be the same player?
Especially when he was always just this small guy who people probably dismissed, and he would always just go out and put up the big numbers. And even all the way through the NFL, he gets to the NFL and he dominates and is just athletically, he's always been so superior. So to get that knocked out of him the last couple of years just because of injuries, I think it's been a tough pill to swallow for
him.
Can
I give you a hot take on Tyrann Mathieu? I think it's been a couple of podcasts before I had a hot take. He had Buda Baker and he was asked if he had heard from Tyrann Mathieu.
Right.
And Buda Baker said no, not yet. If I'm Tyrann Mathieu, and from the moment this kid gets drafted, the comparisons start flying around. And a couple of years ago, I was nearly defensive player of the year. And already they're making comparisons to a kid out of college who hasn't even gone through a single OTA. I take that a little poisonally if I'm Tyrann Mathieu. And all of a sudden I start channeling that. I say, you know what? I'll show you guys the difference between Tyrann Mathieu, the Badger, and a rookie. And I just think it's going to be more of a motivating factor. Not that he doesn't have many different things he can lean on right now and rely upon, but I think the draft pick of Buda Baker, it will just sort of fortify his motivation this year and help ensure a stellar season out of Tyrann Mathieu. That's just what I sense from afar.
I could possibly see that. I mean, I did have a chance actually to ask Tyrann about being compared or having Buda Baker compared to him, although I framed it in such the way as like, do you kind of feel like it's cool to, you know, you've been in the league, whatever it is, 4 years, 5 years, and now people are comparing these rookies to you kind of in the framework of, you know, is it kind of cool that you're now this comparison level?
Sort like, of the benchmark?
Yeah, kind of like when we were talking about, you know, Hassan Reddick and the Von Miller thing. You know, I think Tyrann's response to me was that, you know, he said, you know, I don't get too tripped up on that kind of stuff in terms of being flattered about it. But he did kind of talk about, you know, going out and just being a group and playing good football. He kind of deflected the idea. Now, I took that at the time as, you know, let's take it easy for this kid to necessarily compare him to an NFL player already. But who knows? Maybe in the down deep, he is thinking, you know, let's not compare him because he doesn't deserve to be compared to me yet. I don't know. That's a good question.
I think a lot of it, I think we'll see how the relationship goes when Buda gets here. He's in the quarter system in college, so he can't come for basically all the offseason work and until Tyrann is gone because he's a veteran, and maybe training camp will be really the first time they get together. But I have a feeling maybe Tyrann, I think right now at this point, Tyrann is a little bit, not skittish, but waiting and trying to, he's motivated by a lot of things, and I think he really wants to prove himself. So to your point, I don't know if he feels motivated by Buddha, but I feel like Tyron, once he starts making plays and once he gets that swagger back, I think it'll be a lot easier, and I think the chemistry will be there when he doesn't feel threatened. They drafted a guy who's also going to be the star in the secondary, so I think it'll be fine, but I understand what you're saying. I think especially right now where he is mentally.
So they're saying John Brown is back to being himself. Tyron Matthew, you hope the same. Deion Buchanan is no longer there because of the ankle surgery, and then you have the new guy, Blaine Gabbert.
He's a pocket passer, and that's what he was best in college. You know, he is a hell of an athlete. You know, he's got velocity, he's got accuracy, he's got stature. It's just fitting the system.
And just to show that he's a pretty smart quarterback with good recall, you know, you media guys pressed him to name all of his offensive coordinators 6 in 6 years, and bam, he just rattled that off verbatim.
I wish I would have done that when I talked to him, because I had to go look all that stuff up. I mean, he just wouldn't know it off the top of his head.
Maybe he read your article. Yeah, maybe he was cheating. Maybe, oh yeah, you know, Darren, help me out here.
Actually, I'd be surprised if he could. I mean, it doesn't, honestly, does it surprise you that he
no,
would
No, not really.
Up,
I mean, can you name all your bosses? Yeah, pretty much.
You could.
Yeah,
I mean,
you could.
And again, it's a chicken or the egg thing. You know, it's easy to sit here and say, on one hand, how successful can a guy be when he's got a different offensive coordinator every year? You know, there are people on the other side of it then say, well, maybe he's got a different offensive coordinator every year because if he was playing a little bit better, maybe those guys would stick around. Who knows?
Sure.
But I will say that, you know, from what little I talked to Gabbert, he's a good guy. He seems to be very focused on the now, which is probably a good idea. And nothing has happened since we last talked about the possibility of Gabbert joining, which is, to me, is you're going to have one is Palmer, two is Stanton, and then three is whoever comes out of the rest of them, including Gabbert.
And he's got, I mean, they have two fields, and he's going to get a lot of reps. Carson isn't going to throw very much at all this offseason, so Blaine's going to get his shot out there. And the thing I love about training camp is we talk about these guys and we try to figure out, you know, you look at his traits and the skills he has and why he could succeed or why he's failed in the past and if it'll work out. And then you get to camp and after a couple weeks, you just totally understand whether it's going to work or not. You watch the guy every single day, and that's what the coaches see. And it's not a mystery as to whether this guy is possibly going to be your third or second string or quarterback of the future, because we'll see it. And I think you'll have a really good idea after a few weeks of training camp. We have to speculate now, but I think it'll come into clear focus.
You know, that's a great point, because we watch every snap of every practice during training camp. Mm-hmm. Was Logan Thomas radically different in preseason games than he was in camp? No.
No.
Was Matt Barkley any different in the games than he was in camp?
No.
No. I mean,
and if they did have a good game, and we still would say, hold on, we've seen him a lot. The sample size is a lot bigger when you watch him every day in training camp. Yeah. And if you have a good quarter, that doesn't mean you're a great quarterback.
And I'll say it again. I love the signing of Blaine Gabbert, not only just because it doesn't cost you anything. Why not take it for a test drive? But number two, it gets us through a 5-game preseason where you have something to look forward to in the second half. I'm very curious to see what he has as a quarterback. So if he can learn the playbook, if he can learn it, you know, and that's what he's trying to do right now.
Beautiful thing about football is there's only so many concepts and plays you can run. It's the verbiage that's different. As long as you can paint the picture in your head and walk to the line of scrimmage with the new verbiage, you'll be all right.
All right, so Blaine Gabbert, hashtag been there, done that when it comes to a new offense.
Although it does kind of crack me up as you're talking about something to talk about. You're absolutely right. It's something to talk about in training camp. We can follow it all, but I just remember all of the words and audio and video spilled on Phillip Sims versus Logan Thomas, and then they both got cut right at the end of the preseason.
Yeah, that is true. I'm not saying ultimately there's anything worthwhile there. I'm just saying it gets us through the moment.
But okay. And he's got a first round pedigree. He's never lived up to it, but it's not like two undrafted guys with very minimal talent. He obviously has talent if he was going to get drafted that high. And is he likely to put it together and become the Cardinals quarterback of the future? Of course not. But there is that little tiny bit of hope, and I think that's what everybody waits on, is to see if it'll come true.
But somebody fronted him up with a question that was basically framed, well, you certainly are aware the Cardinals are going to be in the market for a quarterback of the future. That must have factored into your decision. And he said yes. He said absolutely. That was one of the reasons I signed here.
Well, I mean, let's face it. You know, on a personal level, he's trying to carve out the rest of his career, and that's, you see it. And it's the same reason Drew Stanton signed here once upon a time. Now, obviously, Carson Palmer wasn't here when Drew Stanton signed, and that changed a lot, especially for Drew. But you're ultimately trying to find a landing spot where you're going to have some time. Now, what Blaine Gabbert's issue would be is the same thing that Drew Stanton's issue would have been had they not traded for Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton had been the starter, which is, even if Blaine Gabbert wins the job, unless he has some kind of career renaissance that nobody's expecting, you're going to be a placeholder. Even if you somehow win the starting job for whatever amount of time it would be, it's a placeholder until they do find that next guy. So, and there's, again, nothing wrong with it. And when we talk about big picture, is there really that much difference between bringing Blaine Gabbert in and seeing what you can do with him at this point, as opposed to doing it with Zach Dysart last year or Matt Barkley the year before? There really isn't any difference because you're paying him the minimum anyways.
And you mentioned Carson Palmer. So we see Blaine Gabbert out there. We've yet to see Carson Palmer during OTAs. In fact, the plan is to hold him to the very end of OTAs before they go into minicamp. And here's one of the reasons why, Carson.
I've treated the last 8 or 9 years like they were, you know, I was 24, 25, 26, like the first 8 or 9 years of my career. And, you know, you got to adapt. It's difficult for me to do. We're going to stick with the plan.
I guess I'm thinking of Carson Palmer like you would think of a pitcher in February. You know, he's going to have a pitch count. There's going to be a limited number of throws, and you're going to bring them along slowly, and you're going to stretch them out. And that seems to be what the Cardinals are doing, you know, especially considering the age. And let's face it, considering the first half of last season, maybe there was some sort of finding. Maybe there was some sort of revelation that, guess what, we did too much too soon getting ready for 2016, and Carson's arm's not where we wanted it for the regular season. And until he shut it down over the bye week and started taking Wednesdays off, well, guess what? He was a different quarterback.
I looked at the stats today, and I don't know how much they did improve at the very end. I hesitate to say that because he started resting his arm, he became a different quarterback, because I don't think the stats really show that, and maybe we think so with the eye test.
You think he missed a lot of deep throws, though, in the first half of last season? Don't you think a lot of those deeper throws where he was money his first three seasons were missing?
But part of the problem with that, and Kyle, we can get back to Kyle. I don't mean to step on him, but the part of the problem with that is early in the season, your deep threat were Michael Floyd and John Brown, and we already know what happened there, whereas by the time you got to the end of the season, it was J.J. Nelson.
Mm. And I think the
duly noted.
The Buffalo game, he was very bad, probably his worst performance that I saw in Arizona, and he definitely had some problems. I think in the first Rams game he had some issues, but if you go back to the Bucks game, he was really good. New England game, I thought he was fine. So I mean, you can go back and forth, and I definitely hear what they're saying, and obviously they feel it, and I think you make a good point when you talk about these spring training pitchers who thought about the workload, and they try to stretch out their arms and make sure that they're ready for the regular season. And it might be a situation where Carson, like he said on Tuesday, I love practice. It's fun to go out there and just whip the ball around on 7-on-7 or just throw against nobody, just doing routes. And it's fun as a quarterback just to throw those. So I think doing that where you take a little bit more time and realize that might hurt you down the road, I think that is important, where I'm not sure how much of an impact it had, but I don't think it's going to hurt you, because he knows the system so well and he knows most of these receivers so well. I think the arm strength is more important than the reps at this point.
That's why, to me, the whole backstory of this plan, both for this offseason and how everything came to be last year too, I don't know if we'll ever know the absolute truth. I mean, when they talked about the plan for this offseason, Bruce Arians said, oh, yeah, Carson came to me and said, I got a plan. Oh, that's a great idea. Carson said, well, you know how persuasive Bruce can be. You know, he wanted me to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I would love to know where it came from, because partly, you know, going back to what Kyle, you know, did this come from the coaches saying, dude, you're not throwing it the way you normally do? Or is this from Carson saying, I don't feel right? Because if you go back to that, then we have a little bit better understanding of, like you said, Kyle, whether it was necessary or if it means something or not, you know, mentally or physically.
And just one quick point is that Carolina game might have been his best game all season. I think that was before the bye, right before they said that they changed it up. So I thought he was great in that game. So I don't know. They obviously had a reason for it, and he did play really well down the stretch, which some guys tail off at the end of the season. So I think it's encouraging.
I got another hot take. What if it's Buddy Morris and the trainers What if it's the trainer saying, you know what, we're tailoring a program for our 36, 37-year-old quarterback, and every single player in that room has their own special workout, and maybe
sports science, baby.
Yeah, maybe that's a byproduct. Didn't they do that 2 years ago? Remember, they came to the conclusion that during practice they were tracking every single throw and they were trying to limit them, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. If they measure it and you can, if you can see the velocity dip, obviously it's a no-brainer. So maybe that is something they saw, and then yeah, definitely at that point you say, hey, you're resting on Wednesdays.
Sounds like you guys need to launch the I-team and get into that one. You know, an investigative unit. You know, maybe something CSIAZCardinals.com, something like that.
Sports science.
You know, you're right. Science, start working behind science. The scenes and try and figure that one out. All right. Well, that's good. Anything else that we missed during OTAs, gentlemen? Anything else catch your eye so far?
There's lots more to go. That's what caught my
eye. Spoken like someone who's been there before.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard at this point. There's a lot of position battles that might happen down the road, but for now, it's not really a huge competition yet. They're all just kind of trying to learn everything. So we have a little bit to go until then, but I'm interested to see how it'll all turn out.
Can I get to the backfield and watch Chad Williams? I'm kind of curious about Chad Williams. I want to see that kid out in the backfield.
Bruce Arians liked him. He said he's doing well the first couple of days. It seems like the fans are excited about him. I'm not sure how big of a role he'll be able to have unless he just explodes onto the scene, but early reviews are favorable.
Yeah, it's funny because you mentioned what else going on. I mean, that wide receiver room is going to be interesting because just there's going to be way too many bodies for who they're going to be able to keep.
Way too many.
Way too many.
I mean, they got 13 receivers on the roster right
which
now.
Which they always have this many receivers. That's,
did you notice,
that's
though, not, B.A. dropped in the possibility of Andre Ellington going back to running back.
And and I think that's one of the reasons they want him working at receiver was because, not necessarily that he'd go back to running back per se, but if you have a guy on the roster that does both, I think that gives Andre a chance. But I still don't think, given the running backs that they have, that it's a given that Andre makes his team, given everything. He doesn't have any guaranteed money, and you know, he might get pushed out depending on how the rookies are. But going back to the wide receivers, if you count Ellington as a receiver, you got Chad Williams, who just spent a third-round pick. He's going to be there. You know, Britton Golden's been really important on special teams, but there's a guy that may be hard to make the roster. I mean, if Jerome Brown is healthy, is Jerome Brown still in the mix here?
Yes.
I'm saying he will be.
Yes.
But I mean, like, he's going to be. It's going to be one of those things where you may be having to make a decision between Jerome Brown and somebody else, somebody younger, at some point too, if one of these guys really impresses you. It's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
And they've kept between five or six, depending on the year, the last few seasons, so that's usually your number. You're not going to get usually more than six on this team, so special teams I think is a big part of it, which Jerron Brown does really well. I think that'll help him. But yeah, there's a lot of undrafted guys that are trying to make the team, and they look physically imposing. If they can put it together, maybe they'll push for a spot.
I guess what I'm saying is that here in May, and we haven't seen a darn thing of really any significant practice that counts, I think Andre Ellington has a better shot at making the team as a running back than he does as a receiver.
Well,
I guess that's what I'm saying.
I think, like Darren was saying, he's a hybrid where
get a roster spot.
Yeah, nobody's counting on him being a receiver, but maybe he learns a few receiver routes that he can use, and also he's a flexible guy where he can do either one, and maybe that helps him make the team because he can fill in at running back or receiver. He's trying to make himself more valuable at this point.
What to me, for that whole thing becomes, I start looking at the running back. I mean, you figure T.J. Logan's going to make this team. You figure, obviously, David Johnson's on this team. You know, do you like the idea of having Elijah Penny on this team? Do you think Kerwin Williams, I mean, I think the last couple of years, Kerwin Williams has proven he's a better running back at this point than Andre Ellington is.
Yes, agreed.
So, I mean, at some point you're going to have to, how many running backs are you going to have? Is Andre your fourth guy? I mean, Andre's biggest problem is the same problem he had last year. He doesn't play special teams. And if T.J. Logan is your kickoff return guy, then he really doesn't play special teams.
Well, we sort of mentioned the possibility of maybe cutting you guys out a little early, you know, but no free lunches around here. Just thought, you know, you guys cover the NFL. You're not in the NFL. Just another poignant reminder. Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com.